Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that is all about finding good cinema, whatever the source. This week, we'll be doing what many movie fans like to do, discussing films that might have been forgotten, might have been overlooked, or in some way or other just didn't get the attention they deserved. We all have our own list, so let's begin by, Nathan, why don't you start us off?
Okay, sure. So when we started talking about doing this show, and we've done similar shows in the past, but it's been some time since the last one, I usually tend to skew older in terms of the movies I want to call out. And that's sort of a problem in the current streaming climate, because some of the biggest streaming platforms out there tend to think that movies started being made in the 1990s. That's about as far back as you can go. I mean, if you go on Netflix and click on their classic section, it's just absolutely embarrassing. I don't even know why they bother, but you can never find something that's an actual classic. A new classic, maybe. You know, I watched Back to the Future on there the other night. I would say that's a classic, but you can't really go beyond that in terms of the year in which something was made. So I'm turning elsewhere. And for my first choice, the movie I want to talk about is available to stream on Amazon Prime, which actually is a very deep well of older films and B-movies and exploitation horror, so I'm there a lot. And this movie in particular is from 1974, and it's called California Split, directed by Robert Altman, one of the great American filmmakers of any decade, but particularly the 1970s. But this is a movie that fell through the cracks. I mean, he made something like 35 features, so of course some will get forgotten, and I think this is one of them. And it stars Elliot Gould and George Segal, who are compulsive gamblers and compulsive drinkers as well, who meet at a poker game and sort of become kind of partners in betting. And like a lot of Altman movies, California Split is more about the details of the world that these guys inhabit, of the gambling parlors and the diners and the bars, than it is about a plot, even though it does kind of build to one big game and has an appropriately dark, cynical ending. And so I would like to kind of think of this as the proto Uncut Gems, which is another movie I love very much, not only because of the way it portrays gambling and addiction, but also in the sense that this movie is mostly just people shouting at each other and with all that overlapping dialogue. In fact, Altman actually designed an 8-track audio recording system just so he could get everything on tape for this movie. So it's kind of an overload on your senses. And in that sense, I think it's very ahead of its time, but I'm a big fan of this movie. Again, California Split by Robert Altman, and it's on Amazon Prime right now.
Well, Nathan, thanks for that, because that movie completely slipped off my radar. And now that you're describing it, I do remember some of the scenes and more of the auditory exchanges than I typically do, since I'm much more of a visual person.
We both saw it when it first came out. And you know, I wasn't all that impressed with it. I'd have to go back and take a look at it again, seeing it through your eyes, Nathan. But you know, there are a lot of other Altman movies that I would want to check out again before California Split.
But fair enough.
That's a good recommendation. And way to sneak in another one in there, Uncut Gems.
That's right. On Netflix, by the way.
Talk about that for the next couple decades. Right. I decided with the popularity or notoriety or something of Marriage Story this year, Noah Baumbach's film about divorce and love, to, you know, think about some of the other films that had to do with family life and most specifically the dissolution of marriages. And so there are many, many candidates out there. So I've picked a couple of those. And the first is a film from 1982. Again, I'm not going to guarantee that these are upbeat offerings, but a film from 1982 titled Shoot the Moon. And it was directed by Alan Parker and it stars Albert Finney, Diane Keaton, Karen Allen, and Peter Weller. And the thing that I appreciated most about this film, I think, is the fact that we are just sort of put in the middle of what's happening with this family. and we don't really appreciate fully what's going on, but the film sort of opens early on. There's a shot of Albert Finney, and it's clear that there's some event that they're going to, or that he's going to, or something, and he is just sort of falling apart, and we're left to wonder what's going on. And soon it's revealed that the marriage is breaking up. He has a lover, but at the same time, he wants to be part of his original family, his wife, Diane Keaton, and his four daughters. And it's just sort of about the emotions that people display during times of trauma such as this. And it's puzzling because, a little bit like Marriage Story, we find out a few things that went wrong in the marriage, but we don't know everything. And I think that the whole film, again, I think conjures up these deep emotions that people have. Again, not sure it's going to be an upbeat film, but you can access it on Amazon Prime, iTunes, and so forth.
I think it's appropriate that in this show about sort of buried treasures that Alan Parker come up. He just died recently, but I think he's one of the great buried treasures in terms of directors. I mean, all over the board, movies like Fame and Angel Heart and Pink Floyd, The Wall. I mean, he just did a little bit of everything. And I think if people just went and kind of stumbled through his filmography, they would find a bunch of titles that are great that they might not know about.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we could do a whole show about Alan Parker himself because he was so up and down. I mean, Angel Heart itself is a perfect example, as is Shoot the Moon. I mean, both of those films are meticulously made. He was a visual artist. He was terrific. He kind of lost it a little bit sometimes in story, but, you know, that's the thing that we can argue about. The thing about Shoot the Moon that I have to stress is this is one of the darker movies with a dark ending that you're ever going to see about the dissolution of a marriage. I mean, Marriage Story, the one that got Mary Pat on this thought, has an upbeat ending. I mean, it's at least one that's about reconciliation. Not so with Shoot the Moon. So if you're going to go see it, and I would suggest you do if you really like movies, but be prepared for darkness. All right. So, Nathan, you were talking about, I guess it's Amazon Prime you were talking about in terms of going back before the 1990s. But the films that I'm going to talk about are both from the 90s. And the first one is a little noir that maybe a lot of people didn't see for a lot of different reasons. One False Move, the 1992 film by Carl Franklin, starring Bill Paxton, Billy Bob Thornton, a very young and almost unrecognizable Billy Bob Thornton, Cindy Williams, and Michael Beach. You can see this through Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Google Play, you know, a variety of sources. You may have to pay a little bit extra to rent it, but I would suggest you do because, again, a dark, dark movie, but one that has that I think is remarkable for the one thing that we usually talk about when we talk about movies is we talk about who is responsible. I mean, that's been a whole big school of thought from the very beginning. But this is a particular case in which Franklin, who was relatively inexperienced at the time, was handed a great script that was co-written by Thornton and Tom Epperson. And he makes the most of it. It's a great story of these three that begins with this brutal killings, these three thieves, and then they're going to go to Arkansas. And then it cuts to Bill Paxton, who's the sheriff in this small Arkansas town. And slowly you see these two stories, and they finally meet up at the end. It's a great performance by everybody involved, including Paxton. And, you know, it's a wonderful blend of visual storytelling. I think that Paxton was perfectly cast. And, you know, what's amazing is that even though Franklin's next film was Devil in a Blue Dress that starred Denzel Washington.
That's also a great buried treasure people should look up.
But, you know, what's interesting is that his career never really went beyond these two films. He did a lot of television work. And I mean, he had so much potential, at least from One False Move. It showed that he had the potential to be one of the great filmmakers. And I would say go back and see it. Dark, but boy, is it well worth the watch.
I agree. And I think we saw it first at a film festival mm-hmm. and we were sort of, wow, where did this come from? Who is this guy? Who are these people? I mean, obviously we recognize some of the actors in the film, but it's one of those slower movies. But as you point out, it really grabs you. And I think it's important for people to see movies such as this, especially during this time, since most of us are seeing things on the small screen. I think the other benefit of this particular film is that it would play out equally as well watching it on television as watching it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I first saw this movie when I rented it on VHS back in the day. So I think it might be time for me to rewatch it again in higher def. But before we take a break, I'm going to run down the movies we talked about, the buried treasures we talked about. So that would be One False Move, California Split, and Shoot the Moon. And we've got more coming up after this, but I feel like I should remind people of those titles because they're all worth seeking out.
Absolutely. And with that, let me remind you that this is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue our discussion about films that you may have forgotten, may have overlooked, but that you just might want to check out, even if for the second time. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
When you consider the future, please consider Spokane Public Radio in your estate plans. Your gift to the SPR, Fund for the Future, Endowment will ensure that access to real news, meaningful conversations, and great music will continue forever in our communities. One of the most impactful ways listeners can help is through planned gifts. Details are available from the business office at Spokane Public Radio, your tax accountant, your attorney, or the Inovia Community Foundation, formerly known as Inland Northwest Community Foundation. More information at SpokanePublicRadio.org/membership. And thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Druthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I listed a number of films, three of them, in fact, that we think you should go back, in some cases, seek out and purchase for an evening of cinematic streaming. Let's continue. And I'm going to go this time. We were talking about great decades for movies. We did an entire show based upon that. And I'm going to stick with the 1990s. I did One False Move the first. Now, the second time, a little movie called Lone Star, directed by John Sayles. John Sayles is one of those directors, and there are going to be a number of them on the show, Alan Parker being another one, who's had a long career, and a long and varied career.
But what happened to him?
Well, I don't know.
I think he's still making stuff.
He's probably still making stuff, but his best times were in the 80s and 90s. I mean, he was he hit a lot of really good films. And I think Lone Star was the best of them. It's available through iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, a variety of sources. He wrote and directed it. And it stars Chris Cooper early in his career, the great, dependable Chris Cooper, but also Elizabeth Peña, Matthew McConaughey. You know, when he was still, before he was Matthew McConaughey, he was still coasting on what he'd done in Richard Linklater's Dazed and Confused, but also there was Chris Christopherson, Joe Martin. It is really a cast of people who either were stars at the time or would become big stars. And it's this wonderful little story, again, more than one story, all a bunch of loose plot ends. It begins with the discovery of bones, and that goes back to a murder that took place in the past. Chris Cooper is investigating that. It involves his father. It involves his family and two families. And what I really like about this is that, like all Sayles films, he really is into character development. Not just simply the way he makes movies, but he's more interested in what and who people are and what they do than what stories they're involved in. He also gives a lot of attention to secondary characters. In this particular case, we know it's in Texas. And so not only is it a story about the people who are the principals, all of whom are white, but it's also about the other people who live in this small town, many of whom are Mexican-American. And Sayles was always a thoughtful, is and always has been a thoughtful filmmaker. And this is one of his most thoughtful films. And it has one of the great endings, as with One False Move. Both of them are terrific, satisfying, open endings that make you want to walk out of the theater feeling good.
So I am going to talk about another divorce theme film, also from the 1980s. So I'm continuing my theme, and it's titled The War of the Roses. And some of you might remember this, or some of you might choose to forget it, but it stars Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner, and Danny DeVito, who is the divorce lawyer who provides this sort of voiceover commentary.
And who also directed the film.
Yes, and he did direct the film. And I think that these three had also worked together on Romancing the Stone. Another thing, another film worth watching, but very, very different from War of the Roses.
Yin and Yang.
Yes. So maybe this is the type of film that will appeal only to those who've gone through divorces or have been divorced or family law attorneys. But I, even when it got really dark, and it does get pretty dark and goes over the top in a couple of places, I laughed through the whole thing. And maybe that's a commentary on me and not necessarily on the film. But basically, it is the story of a marriage. And the couple, Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, meet cute at an auction. And then they fall in love, live together. He's a lawyer. She sort of focuses on doing and redoing and undoing the decor in their home and so forth. And then it all goes to hell. And it does almost literally end up there. But there are some really funny scenes, maybe amidst the dark gallows type humor. The one that's most memorable to me is Kathleen Turner, who's a former gymnast, plays a former gymnast. She like sort of springs up from Danny DeVito's office at one point, and it's so unexpected, and it's just doesn't really fit that I just, again, continue to laugh. But I can't say that this is a film that everyone would appreciate fully, but if you tend toward the sardonic, I think that you would appreciate it.
We've been talking about some of these films are satisfying. War of the Roses is satisfying to a certain extent, but we've also been talking about films that are dark, and boy, is this film dark. And you talked about, in terms of War of the Roses, you talked about the characters, and you mentioned the house. The house itself becomes an actual character in this film, almost as much as the two principals, but it's a fairly interesting movie.
I also want to say that Danny DeVito, I kind of wish that he directed more. I mean, his visual sensibility and his comic sensibility, I think people forget that as a filmmaker, he had a very dark outlook on life. I mean, not only War of the Roses, but something like Throw Mama from the Train, or later on, Death to Smoochie.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and maybe that's for the best. But I mean, an interesting filmmaker. And I agree. I think The War of the Roses is a terrific movie. Maybe his best as a director as well.
Yeah.
My selection as a buried treasure is maybe the most obscure movie of the ones we've talked about. It's from 1989, and it's called Sidewalk Stories. And it was the debut feature by a writer-director whose name is Charles Lane, who only made one other feature film after this. And even though it played the festival circuit in the late 80s and early 90s, it fell out of print and was remastered and re-released in 2013, which is when it came out on DVD and Blu-ray, but it's not really spoken about much. And now you can see it on Canopy. If you have a Spokane Public Library card, you can access it that way. And it's also on the Criterion channel right now. So I'll describe the plot. There's not much plot, but I'll describe the plot, and then I'll describe the style in which it's told. So it actually stars Charles Lane, the writer-director, as a starving artist, literally a starving artist. He lives in an abandoned church in New York City and scrounges up change by drawing caricatures on the street. And he witnesses a crime in the middle of the night that leaves a little girl orphaned. And so he takes the girl in and tries to care for her. And so even though this sounds like a gritty urban story, and it was shot on location in New York City with primarily Black cast, Charles Lane himself is Black, the movie itself is told as a Black and white silent comedy. And it particularly owes a debt to Charlie Chaplin and his film, The Kid. In fact, they have very similar stories. And so that cognitive dissonance between kind of the violent, scrappy world of, you know, New York street life with this almost kind of fantastical slapstick comedy of yesteryear, I think is actually kind of radical in its own way. And there's a lot of, obviously a lot of Chaplin DNA in the film, but Jacques Tati as well. And so this is a really unusual film and a special one, I think. And I'm glad that places like Canopy and places like the Criterion Channel exist to actually give movies like this a platform, because I don't know if I ever would have heard of it if it weren't for scrolling through both of these services and seeing this film and reading about it and thinking, a black and white silent comedy from the 1980s that's set in modern day New York City, I have to see this. And so I really hope that people take a chance on Sidewalk Stories. There's lots of places to see it, and it's a really quirky, interesting film.
Well, Nathan, thank you for this, because as the listening audience may be able to perceive, we did not share our films with one another ahead of time. So I'm hearing this for the first time, and I have never seen Sidewalk Stories. And of course now, especially knowing I can get it through Canopy for free, always a plus, I'm definitely going to check it out.
If you don't have access to Canopy, if you don't have a card, you can also see it's a $3 rental through Amazon Prime. This is one of the main reasons, besides your encyclopedic knowledge of film, Nathan, that we like to have you on this show, simply because you bring stuff that I have never even heard of. I mean, I think I've heard of the title Sidewalk Stories, but I'm not. Hey, I live in Spokane, Washington, 1989. A movie like this was not going to play here, even at the Magic Plant.
So. I don't think it played most places. I think it skipped by most cities. So, I mean, that's kind of the great equalizer of streaming, is that it finally brings these movies, you know, into our living rooms. So that's a plus.
Well, at any rate, it's time to close. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and this whole show has been an opportunity for Nathan Weindemer, Pat Truthart, and I to list a few hidden gems or forgotten cinematic classics. And so let's go. There were One False Move, War of the Roses, Sidewalk Stories, so on and so forth. I can't even remember them all. At any rate, let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that streaming cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from Roger Zelazny's 1991 novel, Prince of Chaos. Don't wake me for the end of the world unless it has very good special effects. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.